It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Farmers markets could be the best thing to happen to agriculture in this century. Now, some will argue that point because they don't see how conventional agriculture, with large-scale commodity production supplying supermarkets and restaurant chains, benefits from the over 8,600 local farmers markets that have sprung up all over the place. The simple answer is that the markets have been the catalyst for the farm-to-table movement, triggering curiosity, understanding, and oftentimes respect in the way our food is grown. Most everyone that shops at their local farmers market also shop at supermarkets, and they eat at restaurants where they are becoming accustomed to seeing information about the farms and farming systems that produced fresh, canned, jars, frozen foods. These conversations matter a great deal and are added incentive for food producers and farmers to share the story of how they are constantly improving. Additionally, farmers markets foster a community spirit with direct interaction between the farm and the community. You shouldn't miss visiting a farmers market this week. It is the 20th annual farmers market celebration, and this year, the Farmers Market Coalition is highlighting the important role that farmers markets play in fostering entrepreneurship. Farmers markets provide a low barrier to entry, a maximum return on investment, and immediate feedback on products for small businesses. The executive director of the Farmers Market Coalition, Ben Feldman, is my guest today. Ben, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
What is National Farmers Market Week?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Roger. So National Farmers Market Week is really an opportunity to celebrate all the incredible things that farmers markets do for farmers and producers, for consumers and communities. Farmers markets provide a whole suite of services. And so each year we celebrate with USDA National Farmers Market Week. They issue a proclamation and have been doing so for 20 years. So this is the 20th anniversary of National Farmers Market Week. So in some ways this year it's get to celebrate the week itself and the fact that each year we have this wonderful opportunity to talk about how wonderful the food coming out of farmers markets is and what farmers markets really offer communities around the country by bringing together farmers and consumers over the table, as it were, to talk about food.
So, Ben, how many farmers markets are there in America now?
Yeah, so the number of farmers markets has grown rapidly in the last 20 years in particular. So USDA directory estimates that we've got between 8,000 and 9,000 farmers markets. The numbers are, to get into one of the pieces that we sometimes struggle with in our industry is because of sort of the nature of farmers markets. Oftentimes we don't have all the data that we'd like to have about it. So the USDA directory is our best source of the number of farmers markets, although we do know that farmers markets are opening all the time and in some cases closing too. But so it's a ballpark figure that we've got.
Is there any overall trend as far as locations or regions of the country? Are there some areas that you have more of them?
Sure, yeah. Here in California, where I live, we're fortunate enough to have the most farmers markets of any state in the country and the most per capita as well. So we really have, it makes sense in some ways. We have the benefit of lots of agricultural production in proximity of urban areas where there's our large groups of people. And we have both a year-round growing and selling season. So California definitely has definitely one of the states with a larger number of farmers markets, but there's a lot of farmers markets all over the country. Michigan, New York, lots of farmers markets on the Pacific coast in Oregon and Washington as well. And, as far as trends you talk about, we're seeing more and more markets in all places around the country. And we're seeing a couple interesting trends. Farmers markets are largely in response to both their customer base and their selling base, are open for longer seasons, many of them moving to year-round as farmers add things like high tunnels and other season extenders. It gives them product earlier in the season and later in the season. And then many of them are storing product, whether it's root vegetables or certain fruits keep well, and they continue to bring those out in the winter. And so markets have turned to doing oftentimes indoor markets, winter markets inside during the colder months, and then go back out in the summer. So that's one interesting thing that we've been seeing in farmers markets. And another piece, in terms of trends within the industry, is we are definitely seeing that we have more markets popping up in, it used to be that markets popped up in locations that had large spaces and plenty of parking, and now we're seeing more markets that are, you might consider neighborhood markets, that are a little bit smaller in size, but really are adding different services to their market in order to meet the needs of their specific community. So a lot of cases, these markets are going out of their way to ensure that they have, they provide SNAP access so that shoppers who are using SNAP, or I should also mention WIC, two of the federal nutrition programs, are able to shop the market. And markets have really been on the forefront of developing strategies to help try and combat food insecurity and diet-related illnesses by providing access to these programs. And then you also might be familiar with some of the incentive programs, too, that double those SNAP dollars at the farmer's market.
So the SNAP dollars are, what does it stand for again?
It's a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It used to be known as food stamps.
And how does that work at a market?
Yeah, so, a farmer's market isn't an ideal setting, unfortunately, to process digital payments, right? We are typically temporary in nature, don't have access to power or to telephone lines in the market settings. So it necessitates a wireless device. So that was certainly something that was a challenge as farmer's markets were, the SNAP program was moving from its paper food stamp form to the electronic benefit form that it currently utilizes. And so it took, it was definitely a setback. But now many markets have a pretty simple system. They've got a wireless terminal, which looks like, kind of the typical keypad you might see for a point of sale device, whether it's, at a grocery store or a corner store. It just runs, it has a battery that gets charged before the market, and it operates on the cellular technology. And sends that information that way rather than using a telephone line. So there's kind of two different models for shoppers who are using their SNAP cards. They come out with their card to the market. Many markets utilize a central point-of-sale model where the customer comes to the information booth, swipes their card, gets tokens that they can then, or vouchers that they can then spend with the
farmers. So if you had like $50 worth or something, is it like a credit card that you're given that would have your SNAP benefits or WIC benefits or something like that?
Yeah, now SNAP and WIC are different, and they unfortunately rely on different systems right now. But yes, exactly what you described is exactly right for SNAP. There's a card that looks just like a credit card that's used there in the market settings. Again, we do also have some markets where the farmers take the cards. Kind of depends on the needs and the situation of the individual markets. WIC is moving to that system, but it's still, many states have it in a paper format. And certainly the WIC Farmers Market Nutrition Program still remains in the paper form. But
they would get their card, they turn it in, they would get these, they get a card or something or a coin of some sort that they take to the individual farmers and buy whatever they want. And then the farmers can turn it in and get paid back whatever the coins were that they honored.
Yep, you got it exactly right. That's kind of how the system works in those central point-of-sale models. And some markets use vouchers, some markets use paper tokens, some even have kind of loyalty card systems that they use. So it runs the gamut.
Now, some areas actually have a relationship with like Kaiser Permanente and some other health groups out there that are almost prescribing fruits and vegetables, produce that people can purchase at the farmers markets?
Yeah, absolutely. We typically refer to those as fruit and vegetable prescription programs. And they, again, you know, there's a few different forms in which they operate. But in general, yeah, we see doctors who are essentially prescribing to their patients is that they eat more fruits and vegetables. And in many cases, these programs also come with vouchers themselves to help support the cost of doing so. We do know that for many low-income shoppers, there is a gap in pricing between healthy fresh fruits and vegetables and other foods that are available more cheaply.
Where did the money for these vouchers come from?
This is a program that has developed over time farmers markets, working in cooperation with healthcare providers. Kaiser Permanente has done a lot of work, and in those cases, those were typically privately funded. So in some cases, Kaiser Foundation put a lot of funds towards that type of work, as well as some other funders. There was, in the most recent 2018 Farm Bill, there were some funding put in to support those types of programs under the Gus Schumacher Nutrition Incentive Program, which also funds the other programs I mentioned earlier, the incentive or doubling programs. Before we started this call, we were talking a little bit about Gus Schumacher, but you know, his legacy really is the development and the beginnings of institutionalizing of these programs that are really designed to make that connection between low-income shoppers who, like many Americans, are struggling to eat enough fruits and vegetables in their diet, with small farmers who are selling directly to the public, who are important economic drivers for their communities, and being able to make that connection, especially when the government does it. It's a way to use government dollars quite efficiently by having them, you know, have multiple goals and have been quite successful in these programs.
You know, Gus Schumacher was a friend of mine. I really admired him, and he passed away, I think, last year. And so, but if somebody would still like to hear Gus and his words, go to the index of Farm to Table Talk and scan down through there, and you'll find that we did a podcast together, and he's talking about his vision and his hopes for these programs and why he had been working on them. So it's worth a listen to go back there and dig in and hear Gus in his own words talk about it. But it's also good to hear you talking about, you know, these kinds of things continuing at the farmers markets and continuing to grow. And I want to circle back to something you said a few minutes ago. You were talking about how more of these markets are going year round, and you tackled two things. I don't know, just in passing, the reason that they haven't been year round, obviously, is that one, in many parts of the country, they can't grow food year-round, although with greenhouses and hoops and others, they're getting more produce that they can grow year-round. And the other, it gets cold a lot of places. But now that they're able to move in, that solves one problem. And you also mentioned there's some of them that are doing more preservation. So they're recognizing the seasonality of the foods they're growing locally and canning them and coming up with other products, which is something you didn't used to see at farmers markets, but now you do, aren't you? And you're also seeing people that are able to produce certain things almost in their own kitchens or other kinds of facilities that are available that they can bring developed products of some sort into these markets. That's really interesting to see that unfolding.
Yeah, and you just hit on two relevant pieces as well that have helped with that development, particularly for farmers and home producers. Is there's been a recent movement around cottage food laws or homemade food laws, and recognizing that there are certain types of products which the health department usually refers to as non-potentially hazardous foods. But these are, your baked goods, your breads, pastries, cookies, candies also, and some jams, things that run a very low risk of ever getting anybody sick. And there has been a movement to allow these types of products to be made in the home and then sold, in particular when sold directly to the public, because we also know that in terms of food safety and traceability, direct marketing is one of the better, one of the best choices. So there's been this movement, and then also there is another federal program called the Value Added Producer Grant. This is one of the programs that directly supports farmers, in particular farmers who are selling at farmers markets, and it helps them put together a plan and then build out small-scale processing facilities to do some of those value-added products that fall under the homemade food law, but even to put in, you know, a fully certified kitchen and be able to do other value-added products within their kitchen and using the products that they grow on their farm. And as you said, it really is a difference maker, both in terms of seasonality and being able to have, you know, many of the farms have product through the winter that they wouldn't otherwise have, but also in order to be able to capture more of the food dollar and be able to provide a wider range of products to shoppers at the market.
It's really exciting. And the other thing is if you go different parts of the country, like I have, you can go in the middle of the winter to someplace in Madison, Wisconsin, and find some foods that were produced the way you just described in this kind of cottage industry of preparation of, you know, sauces and soups and other things like that. But they're totally unique. You know, you won't find them anywhere else in the country because it's somebody's individual or family recipe or something like that that really makes it an interesting adventure because you can see that much variety across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the one of the things that's interesting about that also is sometimes these individual businesses that started at a farmer's market and had this wonderful product that you couldn't find anywhere else, you know, it's the right combination of product and business, and they're able to build these businesses into regional or even national products. And we actually see this quite a bit, and I think there's something there in terms of the way in which farmers markets serve as something of an innovation lab for food products. And that's actually, you know, we're talking about National Farmers Market Week. This year, one of the things we are celebrating with National Farmers Market Week is the way in which farmers markets really had and do serve as a economic generator and a real opportunity to develop a business, particularly for people who may not be able to either bring together the capital necessary or have the connections to build a business in a more traditional way. Farmers markets can be a pretty low capital way to start a business. And then by the virtue of the fact that there's a customer base coming through week to week that you as a food creator get to interact with regularly, you can test your product and see how people respond to it very immediately. And farmers markets, you know, definitely attract people who seek out new products and are interested in food. And so in many ways, they're also people who are more likely to be ambassadors for that new product, you know, share it with their friends. And so all taken all together, it's a great way for someone who's interested in developing a food business to go ahead and get that started. And we see that with some of the brands that have now gone national, started in farmers markets, like Odo Foods and Dave's Killer Bread and Blue Bottle Coffee and Justin's Peanut Butter, right? These are examples of products that started at farmers markets and now are available in national grocery stores and across the whole country.
Well, you know, Ben, we were both in Santa Cruz for a while, and I don't know if you remember, yeah, there was a bakery that started baking and selling just at the Santa Cruz market that ends up then went to brick and mortar and still at the farmer's market, but they're really probably the best bakery in the Santa Cruz area. And now they've got a large brick and mortar building too, that people lined up every morning to get some of their fresh breads. but they got their start at the farmers market. So just what you're saying, just what a spot for entrepreneurs to try something and build a demand and get a business going.
You know, it's one of those few opportunities that may still exist. And so for that reason, we also see people who may not have traditional access to starting their own business, whether it's immigrants or people who previously been incarcerated or people who have, you know, who again, don't have capital to start a business in a more traditional way.
You know, I haven't really thought about that before when you were saying the people that have been incarcerated. It's obviously it's hard to get a job, but they got to get a business started. And this is the most equal opportunity that perhaps you can have. So if you have an idea and you can go to a market and prove yourself that way, it's a good way to get going. And certainly for immigrants, I mean, because you do see so many different ethnic varieties of foods now showing up at these markets. It's just fascinating to me to be able to see, you know, again, as you go across the country, to see the varieties that we have available to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly think that that has contributed some to the development. I think there are more types of food, more varieties of food, more different food products available in this country than ever before. And it feels as though farmers markets had a big role to play in that, in developing the spread of food and influencing the way people think about food. We certainly have seen grocery stores take a page from the farmers market playbook in terms of stepping up their game in terms of the quality of their produce, highlighting products that are produced in the community. And so, you know, it definitely seems as though farmers markets have really influenced some of the major trends in food within our culture today.
You know, Ben, when farmers markets were really taking off, and I think you mentioned earlier, like a little over 20 years ago, when you were starting to really seeing them ramped up, it kind of finally got on the agenda at USDA, perhaps in a small way at first, but many people predicted that it would maybe align with certain political influences, like it might shift from one administration to the other. Has that happened? I mean, in the time that we're talking about, there's been both Republican and Democratic administrations. Is there shifting emphasis as the years pass and how much the USDA is behind the farmers market programs?
So I would say farmers markets are very much a bipartisan topic. You know, when we think about who benefits from farmers markets, I gave you the answer right there. It's farmers, right? And the income that's generated from farmers markets, oftentimes, you know, the market may take place in an urban area. And so it's also for many people who live in the city, they're one of their few opportunities to interact with agriculture. In many ways, farmers markets are the face of agriculture for many people who live in cities today. And it's one of the few places actually where people from rural parts of the country and urban parts of the country are coming together and talking and interacting with one another. And so for a whole host of reasons, farmers markets have been very bipartisan. We certainly, in the most recent Farm Bill, the 2018 Farm Bill, the results of that really reflect bipartisan support for farmers markets. And, you know, there's a number of programs that have increased their support for farmers markets. And we see candidates across a whole political spectrum who support farmers markets, whether they agree with each other on anything else. One thing that a lot of people can still agree on is that farmers markets are a tremendous way for communities to build resilience. It's a great way for customers to get the freshest, tastiest product. And for farmers, for many of them, it's a livelihood. The reason they are able to stay in business is because of the farmers market. And so with so many different things that they do for communities, wherever your political priorities are, there's something to like about farmers markets. And like I said, we see that play out in how farmers markets are supported at the national level and then also, you know, more locally as well.
You know, I had Senator Debbie Stabenow from Michigan, who's the ranking member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, a Democrat, praising her chairman, a Republican, for coming together and stepping up and increasing the support, promotion and other things in support of programs like the Farmers Market. And I suppose your organization is able to benefit in some way. Are there Is there promotion support or other things that are available to you to help the farmers markets as a result of what's in the Farm Bill?
Yeah, there's definitely a few different programs that happen at the federal level that are directly supportive of farmers market programs. We talked about a few of them already. We talked about the Gus Schumacher Nutrition Incentive Program. Those programs all started in farmers markets, and much of the funding for those programs still happens in farmers markets. That program, for example, in the 2014 Farm Bill, where there's $1 million for it, that program has now increased to $250 million.
$250 million seems like that's quite a pile of change there. That should be able to be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's also the Farmers Market Promotion Program, and that's one that is more directly oriented to our number one stakeholder, which is market operators. And market operators are the groups of organizations out there making a farmers market happen. I know sometimes people think farmers markets magically pop up overnight, but you know, in truth, there's definitely a person or oftentimes a team of people out there making it happen. There's a lot of work that happens behind it, and farmers market operators are often community organizations that are under-resourced and trying to make all of these many programs work. So programs like Farmers Market Promotion Program, which help support farmers market operators as they attempt innovative programs, like we mentioned, incentive programs or prescription programs, but also programs that simply promote the market and allow them to go beyond the basics and try and, again, develop innovative ways of finding new customer bases and connecting with the consumer. These programs are really important to the work that we do. And then there's other programs that are related, but a little more tangentially related to the work that we do.
Well, Ben, with 8,000 some farmers markets in the country, they're almost everywhere, but they're not everywhere. If somebody's listening to this right now and they're saying, gee, I wish we had a farmers market. I mean, if you're a farmer or if you're somebody that thinks we need to have this in our community, I mean, what do you do? I mean, how would you go about trying to create a farmers market today?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And, you know, some of your other listeners, particularly if they're market managers, their response might be don't. Starting a farmers market can certainly, you know, it is one of the professions that requires the widest skill set. It is not something that is, you know, nobody gets a degree in how to run a farmers market. But in the Farmers Market Coalition, we have a ton of resources available to our members, which will, you know, help someone who's new to markets get up to speed and then also learn the types of things that they need to be aware of. I would always recommend someone who's looking at starting a new market to look around the community and see where their nearby markets are and see, you know, try and figure out if there's a way to expand upon that. Some markets, for example, some communities have found that rather than trying to start a new market, their more successful strategy is to develop transportation mechanisms that help get their community to the market or vice versa, that may help transport the produce to the community without having a full-fledged market. And also another piece that would be really important to think about in starting a new market is trying to track down an organization or entity, as I described, a farmers market operator, to get their perspective on it. These are professional organizations, do run the gamut in level of experience, but what it takes to run a farmers market is a pretty specialized activity, and having those resources and support of someone who has already done at least some of the work is extraordinarily helpful, because even experienced market managers sometimes have challenges starting new markets. It can be a challenging activity to embark upon. So again, making sure that you have resources at your disposal if you're headed down that route.
So Ben, I'm guessing that your organization exists to help farmers markets succeed.
That's exactly right.
And The farmers markets, is it voluntary? There isn't like a national checkoff program or something, but they choose to pay a membership fee to belong to your organization, to tap into your resources. Is that right?
That's correct. We have a pretty reasonable rate for our membership. It's simply $40. We do also have relationships with many state associations around the country. And when an individual market operator joins their state association, they automatically get membership in the Farmers Market Coalition, and that is always cheaper than joining us directly. So we have information on our website about where there are state associations, and again, in places where there aren't state associations, markets are welcome to join us directly. Again, we have a number of toolkits, including one for our upcoming National Farmers Market Week, which I would be remiss if I didn't mention, that has a whole set of resources around how to engage with National Farmers Market Week. So it has member-only resources for our members that include templates for local proclamations, template for press releases, and other infographics that they can use on social media. We also have resources available much more widely to either non-members or folks outside the industry about important things to know about farmers markets. We've got a farmers market trivia in there. We've got our press release, a ton of work into that. We also have a legal toolkit. And then we also, for example, have a resource center that has hundreds of resources in it for market operators about, you know, whether everything from examples of rules and regulations to marketing plans and the like. So everything you could need, soup to nuts, in terms of how to run a farmer's market.
So how do they reach you, or where do they find this information?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is farmersmarketcoalition.org. Pretty easy and straightforward. Probably the best way to reach us. If anybody's interested in emailing us, they're welcome to do so. info@farmersmarketcoalition.org is the best way to email us.
Well, I tell you, it's great talking to you about farmers markets. It's even it's great going to farmers markets. And I hope that there's a lot of people celebrating the week and thinking of farmers markets, and perhaps because of our reminding, I'm going to make a special point to go out once or twice or three times this in the near future to visit their local farmers market. They're fun, aren't they, Ben? It's a great place to be.
It's a wonderful place to be. It's a great way to spend an hour or an afternoon, depending on how much time you have. And I've just been really fortunate to continue a whole career in this work and get to see the characters who participate in farmers markets and get to eat the great food that's there, and also just being outside, being part of a market. It's really a special place to become part of the community. So I'm super fortunate to have been able to do that my whole career.
Well, you're right to say they're characters, and because there's some of them are characters. There's some interesting people sometimes. They're fun. They're playing fiddles and music sometimes, and the aromas of different foods and people having a good time picking up flowers and enjoying and chatting with neighbors and asking the farmer about how they're raising food. It's seemed like no place else. But let me ask you another thing, though. You said you've been fortunate enough to have a career that you're in the middle of all of this. How did you get here? I mean, did this one of those things, you were a little boy growing up that you were saying, geez, someday I hope to be able to help farmers markets.
I didn't think that I would be doing this exactly, but I did grow up in a pretty rural part of California. And I did think that despite the fact that my family didn't farm, I did expect that that was probably the direction I was headed. I did an apprenticeship. You mentioned UC Santa Cruz. I did an apprenticeship at UC Santa Cruz there on the farm and garden selling. They don't have a farmer's market exactly, but there's a farm stand there. And then I went on to work for a bakery in Santa Cruz selling at farmer's markets. And one thing sort of led to another, and I got a job managing a market. And again, one thing led to another, and I got a job managing a group of markets. And then that evolved into working with other markets around the state, around in particular SNAP Access and some of the incentive programs. And then we created the California Alliance of Farmers Markets, and that grew into working here at the Farmers Market Coalition. So it's really been not exactly what I anticipated, but, you know, pretty darn close. And it's been wonderful to spend a career in this field, which I didn't know existed when I started in it. Again, very fortunate that I've had that opportunity.
Well, you know what? I bet there's some people listening that they hope they could be as fortunate as you've been. They're lucky enough to be involved or be involved to have something to do with either having products for the farmer's market or just like the most of us, which is go there and enjoy them. And then finally, I want to ask you one other thing. If we were going to look down the road 5 years from now, how might you hope that whole scene has evolved? You've already got markets all over the place. What would look like healthy growth? A healthy picture for, 5 years down the road for farmers markets in America?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that farmers markets need to be focused on and thoughtful of is, as we continue to grow and develop, is how do we address some of the consumer demand for increased convenience while retaining what's at the core of the farmers market? And I think there are opportunities there, but there's also challenges. We certainly see the use of the term farmer's market to describe things that don't meet what I would consider to be a farmer's market, where you have farmers selling directly to the consumer. So we've got to walk that balance and make what we do more accessible, continue to go beyond the existing shopper base. And some of that is convenience, whether it's transportation, whether it's convenience in terms of parking, number of hours, ability to transport produce, a whole range of things that are included in there, while also keeping the core that makes a farmer's market special, which is that the consumers buy their product directly from the farm, and they're able to then get everything that comes along with that, which means the ability to interact with a farmer, to learn about the produce, to learn about their food and understand how it was produced and how it was raised and who did it and why, and also have those rich social interactions that are part of what's beautiful about a farmer's market. So it's definitely an interesting balance, and I think we'll see more markets moving towards either whether it's permanent structures or at least more infrastructure, again, partly to address seasonal challenges, but also in order to address some of the conveniences for their customers. For example, a little more a permanent shed that could include an ATM is a service to their customers. It's a small thing, but again, something that can make a big difference. Or having shopping carts on hand, or little things that can help bring that convenience factor to farmers markets. And I think we're going to continue to see more of that as farmers markets try and bring some of their consumers who may have been lured by delivery programs or things like that, lure them back to the farmers market.
That's an exciting vision. And I think that's one that with that vision, if that's accomplished, there'll be more farmers getting established too. That can be small scale, local farmers. There'll be more entrepreneurs coming up with ideas to produce food for this vision that you just described there. I bet it'll get there, Ben. I want to thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Well, I appreciate you having me on the show. It's nice talking to you.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.